This program is sponsored by the Independent Patriots for Change Party.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Go Out and Vote, sponsored by IPC. Good evening, Doctor.
Hello, good evening. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much for having us around again. And it's critically important that all the members of the public understand why the IPC, effectively being the only political party that has invested in educating the public around the issues of their democratic right to choose their leaders and to choose the political party that is going to be implementing policies that will be affecting their everyday life. And for them to be able to understand that there isn't one escape route to say that I don't get myself interested in politics. Every single thing that you do in your life is determined by those that you actually delegate your power of self-determination. The process involved in voting is to recognize that the reason why we give and why constitutions give citizens the ability to vote and the right to vote is because the power for self-determination is inherent in the individual, in the electorate. And when you are actually going to vote, when you are going to make that cross, you are delegating your authority of determining your own affairs to a political party and to a political party leader. In the last case, as the president of that country, to preside over the management of affairs of the public as the president. And you also need to be able to understand that once you made that cross over the name of Dr. Itula, you've delegated that specifically to Dr. Itula as a presidential candidate. And when you put it in the box, you have done your delegation complete. Now, it is necessary when you do that to understand actually what are the qualities and characteristics of a leader that you choose to be able to govern over your affairs. What is very important is this, that in order for a leader to gain the trust of the citizens and the electorate, they must be ethical and ethically sound. They must be honest. They must also have a high degree of integrity to ensure that they are not stained in any way whatsoever with corrupt tendencies or corruptions at all. But also a leader must make sure that when you vote for them, they are going to appoint your cabinet of ministers that are going to govern different sectors of the government, different departments of the government. And a leader must be accountable to the electorate and also must ensure that they take responsibility for their own actions and that of their team in general.
And that is what you say when it's when you talk about accountable governance.
Accountable governance. So you can't just give this delegated power to somebody and they do what they want with it without coming back to the people to say, this is what I have done. And that accountability is tested every 5 years. It should really be tested on a regular basis where the leaders go to the public to be able to report to the public what they've been doing. But even by before you seek that authority from the public, a leader must be on the ground and connected to the very people that they seek the authority to govern. They also need to understand that there are a lot of emotions involved and a lot of morality involved in making these decisions. A lot of people have been traumatized, especially after 34 years. We've had rampant unemployment in this country that has caused a lot of mental health, that has called a lot of people to even commit suicide. Families has broken up. When you are approaching these issues, you have to approach them with a high degree of sensitivity and also understanding that some of these people who have been traumatized have lost complete hope, not only in politics, but also in political parties and also in politicians themselves. And that's why I say I'm not a politician, but and that's why I also am only standing as a presidential candidate and not having the dual standing as a presidential candidate, because I believe that our constitution clearly makes that separation of power. And that separation of power is starting with the electorate, as you like, electorate has been given an apple and an orange.
Mm-hmm.
And the constitution say, give this apple to the person who wants to be the president and the orange to the person who wants to make the laws.
Yeah.
And then the president takes an oath of office and say, I, Panduleni Philemon Bango Itula, shall uphold, protect, and defend as the supreme law,
mm-hmm.
the constitution of the Republic of Namibia,
yes.
and faithfully mm-hmm. obey and execute and administer the laws of the Republic that is made in the National Assembly.
Mm-hmm.
Once you take that oath mm-hmm. to uphold, to protect, and to defend the constitution,
mm-hmm.
you are also saying that you'll defend, uphold, and protect
mm-hmm.
the fundamental rights of every single citizen, irrespective of their social status or economic status.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really need to understand that it's not voting mm-hmm. for a party because historically you or your parents belong to that party.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be voting to what is this political party proposing
yes.
to do. Mm-hmm. In order for me, when I delegated my power to them, to later on come to them and judge them and say, you have not delegated, you have not executed what you promised to deliver.
Yeah.
And this is why it's very careful that when members of the public are listening to politicians or to political party leaders
yes.
putting forth what they are going to be doing when they have been elected,
mm-hmm.
they need to read between the lines to say, is this person honest with us?
Yeah.
Is this person trustworthy?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've got leaders mm-hmm. that has been in government for 34 years.
Yeah.
And they are now again promising the same people that they promised in previous elections 3, 4, 5 times that, you know, I'm a snake.
Mm-hmm.
This time I've got no poison. I'll be biting you without actually giving you any poison.
Mm.
Now, anyone that believes that attitude of saying we will do better
mm.
than what we could have done mm. in 34 years is really being taken for a ride.
Mm-hmm.
So one important thing that I'm really extremely concerned about is the youth of Namibia.
Yeah.
Our parents at the beginning of our independence voted for loyalty to a political party.
Yeah.
And they voted for allegiance to a political party,
mm-hmm.
and partly because this was the liberator. The politics of singing liberation songs
mm-hmm.
is not feeding the nation. It's not providing jobs for the people. It's not providing medicine in hospital
mm-hmm.
or a better education system
mm-hmm.
or a better infrastructure in our country for us to grow our economy.
Yeah.
Those politics are discarded throughout Southern Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And it's demonstrated in South Africa. It's been demonstrated in Botswana, mm-hmm. our neighbors next door. And it's been demonstrated by the young people
mm-hmm.
in Zambia. I don't want to mingle into how those people are now governing.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want to advise the Namibian young people and the youth is mm-hmm. this, that this idea of you are the leaders of tomorrow is dead
yeah.
and it should be buried and never be revived.
Okay.
If anybody who have been in government for 84 years is going 34 years is coming to me
mm-hmm.
to tell me that I will be in government and you'll be the leader of tomorrow,
mm.
I'll tell them to really go away so that I can seek an alternative person who's there to open the doors for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I consider myself having actually been associated with the revolution from its onset
mm-hmm.
and having actually come to this country and realized the mess this country is in.
Mm-hmm.
I've taken it upon myself to say that, and with the leadership of the IPC, we can do better.
Okay.
Every time that makes us wake up in the morning is to try and see how best we can actually bring about change in this country. Now,
mm-hmm.
our young people have got qualifications and they believe that by going to get through an educational system,
mm-hmm.
you open doors to prosperity, economic well-being throughout your life.
Mm-hmm.
But they come back with qualifications and they go back to get another one in order to see the opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
I've got people who are dual qualified as an education teacher, mm-hmm. as also as an economist, but they are not getting jobs.
Yeah.
I want to tell the teachers in Namibia, I'm here for you. I'm here to look after you, to try and look after the environment in which you are working, and to try and see the remuneration that you are getting so that I can appreciate your work as a president of the republic once elected. Because it's very important that education is a cornerstone of any nation.
Okay.
We are really striving to make sure that everybody is educated. And it's very important that we recognize the teachers as really pivotal to where we are going and our children are going. And we need to know that our teachers are in communication with the villagers and everybody else. And it's the convey belt of our message to everybody to say that teachers of Namibia, Dr. Itula is here to look after your needs, to ensure that your environment is improved. We've recently seen loads of pictures of schools, especially in the Kavango East and West, that has not been cared for. Why would any teacher go and vote for a government or a party or a leader who has been associated with the consequences of the teaching environment in which they find themselves now? Why would a young person who has got qualifications and knows of other people, their peers or people who have been before them that has got qualifications and never actually had a job at all, to find an engineer selling, not that it's wrong to sell anything at all in order to make ends meet, but to find somebody who has really spent their energy into education and unable to use their qualifications, it's very disheartening. So what is critically important for the young people is not to go into the arguments of, I don't like that person, or is this age, or anything like that. You'll be misled by people who think that a degree of radicalism makes you a leader.
Yeah.
You know, selfishness that we have seen in some of the leaders who will be able to get 2, 3, 4, 5 salaries when they are very young, other people are not having an opportunity. This is really dangerous. So we need to look at the leader in terms of the qualities that they actually display and their commitment and conviction to bring about change. Now, there hasn't been any leader in Namibia at all that has gone to the villages and that has visited and sat down on the ground with the people. I remember going around one of the villages in Ohangwena, and this lady said, Dr. Itula, come and sit here and let me talk to you. So I came and sat where she was sitting on the ground. So it's critically important that you understand that I have to be on the ground with the people to be able to understand them. For young people out there, I'll encourage you in your thousands and thousands to be out there at 3 o'clock in the morning and be in that queue. It's the only opportunity for you to actually cast your vote and delegate that power of self-determination to Dr. Itula. And I will be able to understand and look at politicians in this country. And I really have got doubt as to whether we will turn around this country. I'm quite happy to work with a lot of politicians in this country for the sake of Namibia. When it comes to Namibia and the future of this country, I've got no interest. The interest of Namibians is paramount. So, folks, let's go out there and vote. And parents, let's go out and vote for the future of our grandchildren and children as well, to make sure that Namibia is actually taken out of this mess that it is.
Okay. So, Doctor,
one
of your slogans, a very powerful slogan, I must say, is Namibia is all we have and it is not for sale. So when you said that, where was your heart?
First of all, is this, that you need to understand that anything you own, the moment you adjoin your labor to it, it becomes your possession. The labor that went into Namibia for us to attain it is sacrifices. And those sacrifices was by people who had the conviction that we have to save our country from the colonialists. Now, what we've got is something we can call home. It's Namibia. And that means that if we were to give Namibia away to be sold to the highest bidder, our land to be sold to foreigners, then we'll have nothing left. A country is there for us to enjoy now for the rest of our lives, and then to leave it in sustainable condition to generations to come. So the reason I did that is to make sure that there's a commonality amongst Namibians of something that we can all hold on.
Yeah.
You know, you call Americans, they are Americans. You call Chinese, they are Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they will not call yourself anything else. But what is it that we as Namibians mm-hmm. identify as belonging commonly to all of us mm-hmm. other than our own country? But when we think about it, it's because we reflect back mm-hmm. as to how we gained this independence mm-hmm. through the liberation struggle led by Tate Kulunu Yoma mm-hmm. and many others that have sacrificed.
Mm-hmm.
So should we do anything not to retain our authority over Namibia, we would have betrayed the sacrifices of all those who've died. I mean, my two young brothers died in the liberation struggle.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was shot next to me on the 9th of April, mm-hmm. 1978, mm-hmm. when late Mbarawa Chitambi Kapuo was being buried on that day as well.
Mm-hmm.
Buried later on. And the other one died in the liberation struggle on the Eastern Front in Zambia as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people have lost quite a lot of loved ones during the liberation struggle. I'm not prepared to betray them. I have had a lot of young people that I've taken across the border as well. Mm-hmm. And I've had a lot of, at that time, comrades that has worked hard with me as well. Some of them never returned.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were the ones who were alive, they would have been able to do the same thing. So Namibia is all we have because a lot of blood was shed for us. When we say in the national anthem, their blood waters our freedom. It's exactly what we are saying.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very a sacred statement to say mm-hmm. that is yours,
mm-hmm.
but not yours to destroy or to sell,
mm-hmm.
but yours to keep for future generations.
All right. Doctor, part of your manifesto is that we are basically looking at unemployment and we are looking at housing and we are looking at basic necessities that every Namibian should have just on merit of being a Namibian only.
Yeah.
Now, when we talk about housing within the country, how do you plan to work around that issue?
Right. Let's look at, first of all, the National Development Plan number 4,
okay.
which actually, according to the African Statistical Agency, says that there are 300,000 housing units required in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
And there are 900,000, almost a million Namibians who've mm-hmm. got no accommodation.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of these people are actually students that are studying in various places as well.
Mm-hmm.
We also need to look at the census that recently has been taken, that of 1.5 million people living in urban areas,
mm-hmm.
and that was 1.5 million living in rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we are looking at the housing, is to look at how best can we provide affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest problem that people could not actually get land in order for them to build houses or to have a house built there is the dragging of local authorities in servicing the land.
Mm-hmm.
What IPC has proposed is to actually take that responsibility out of the local government
mm-hmm.
and then take it into central government and mm-hmm. put it out for bidding so that we got mass servicing of the land
mm-hmm.
and then be able to allocate land.
Mm-hmm.
Land for accommodation purposes, land for commercial purposes as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that we said is this, that we will be able to provide basic services of water, sanitation, and electricity to the people
mm-hmm.
Without moving them sort of in situ renovation of these properties as well. And we'll also be making access and aid people to get loans to be able to build their own houses as well.
Mm-hmm.
But also, we are going to declare a state of emergency on housing
okay.
to make sure that we will be able to get the assistance of the military
mm-hmm.
to be able to construct a lot of houses in a short possible time,
mm-hmm.
utilizing both our revenue coffers,
mm-hmm.
also partnership with the private sector, and also our developmental funders as well,
mm-hmm.
to try and see whether we can actually resolve it. Now, according to the statistics, it was said that it will need probably something like $76 billion to build all those houses.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the money that the revenue coffers have actually collected this year alone, is $78.6 billion,
mm-hmm.
of which $34 billion went to salaries as well,
okay.
and $24 billion went to education.
Mm-hmm.
Now, What we need to do is we need to reduce the spending by government by reducing the number of ministries. And we also need to look at how best we can collect money and how best can we encourage and create opportunities for businesses to come and invest in Namibia. Mm-hmm. And that brings me to the reduction of the tax regime in order to make sure businesses are making more profit and employing more people by expanding their businesses as well. And the more people there are actually in employment, the more we will collect our personal taxes, and we'll make sure that what we collected this year, according to the statistics, is 19.739 billion. Now, if we double the workforce, we'll be able to double the personal contributions to our revenue coffers. Now, the needs for land is different from different people. Mm-hmm. The need for land in the urban area is different from those people in the rural areas.
Yes.
And we need also to understand that we've got two systems that are coexistence and have been doing so since almost in the 1950s, and especially with the Odendaal Plan of 1964. Mm-hmm. The creation of the Ovambo Mangeti, or what we now call the Mangeti farmers, was such that economically the system was designed to empower the white community south of the red line, as it were, mm-hmm. and not empower the other communities in the communal land.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we are proposing is to try and see whether we can bring in a system where we can actually provide ervens for homestead owners who are the current owners.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll come to your homestead and say, your homestead is now worth 3 million Namibian dollars.
Mm-hmm.
You are able to utilize that equity in it and then get a loan in order for you to improve on it and to create better environments of livings. And then that loan can be repaid flexibly and agile enough to withstand any shocks. And it can be repaid. You can use the money to pay for education of your children. Mm-hmm. In that way, you are actually creating generational wealth as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we were to demarcate something like 200,000 ervens in the homesteads in the 4O regions, Kavango and Zambezi and Chodonjupa and Omaheke and parts of the south, mm-hmm. we will be able to generate something like 600 billion Namibian dollars in equity alone. Mm-hmm. So that is actually going to create wealth. That is how we want to deal with the land as well. And also, for those in the commercial sectors, we are actually saying that the land belongs to the people.
Mm-hmm.
If you own that land and you are not utilizing it, you will lose it. Mm-hmm. We will legislate. You use it or you lose it. And we've got a lot of foreigners mm-hmm. who own land in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you just drive into a machete and you look on the right-hand side and on the left-hand side, there are farms full of grass there.
Mm-hmm.
You cross over in the reservoir, in a machete, there is no grass. The
mm-hmm.
cattle are dying.
Mm-hmm.
Would you take the owner of those cattle wrong if they invade a farm and say, I'm going to graze here?
Mm-hmm.
Just around Kalkveld, for example, you've got a farm that belonging to a foreigner, full of grass.
Mm-hmm.
We've got caretakers there. And that is the same scene that you get around the whole country, especially in conventional farms. But what we also want to do is this, to try and see whether we can actually provide equity in farms that are owned by people in the communal land, like, you know, which Chodonjupa,
mm-hmm.
in terms of Okoshituo, for example.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to a farm in Hochveld, that farm is 56 million Namibian dollars worth. But you go to somebody with 200 heads of cattle, the big plot, there's no grass, there's no rotational grazing either, and it's completely overgrazed.
Mm-hmm.
That farm is worth nothing. So we need to look at long term how we are going to deal with the issue of land in general.
Mm-hmm.
So land has been a problem. China, 300 before Christ, has managed it, but not completely.
Mm-hmm.
The Philippines has done the same thing. Mexico has had problems. Bolivia has had problems. The rest of Africa has had problems.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to approach the land with the people that are going to utilize that, not getting a few people from universities to write position papers for a minister to go and read, but the people who are involved in the land issues.
Mm-hmm.
So our students, my students, in the capital and other towns, are finding it extremely difficult
mm-hmm.
to study because they've got constant mind-eroding worries of paying rent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's time that we provide some accommodation for these people and support our students in education so that they can actually have stress-free education to concentrate on their work and to be able for us to skill our people to be able to actually carry out. The skill gap in Namibia is mm-hmm. killing our economy. And also, of course, the maladministration of our economy, our administration in government as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the land issue we will tackle, and we'll tackle it with an emphasis on removing the corruption associated with land transfer in this country as well. It was the know-who that gets pieces of land, the know-who that has got housing, etc. So we are going to open it up to most of the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Doctor, there is also the question of resources.
Yeah.
When we say that Namibia is a very resourceful country, we have so many minerals, we have so much, right? We are rich,
yeah,
basically. And when politicians or whoever is in power says something like that, many of us that are on the ground, we are sitting and we are looking at ourselves and we are asking, like, Mara, what do we really have? And if I had to ask you a question right now, and I asked you and said that, what do we have right now as Namibians in terms of our natural resources? What do we have? What would your answer be?
When we are talking about Namibians, I'm going to be concentrated on the vast majority of Namibians. Mm-hmm. What do they have? Nothing. They do not have anything. Mm-hmm. Namibians don't own anything. Mm-hmm. They don't own their resources. Mm-hmm. The resources are benefiting a small clique, mm-hmm, of connected people, the politicians. The vast majority of us, I haven't got any shares. Mm-hmm. Vast majority of our people own nothing at all. Mm-hmm. And yet we say the resources belong to Namibians. Mm-hmm. What is the point of having resources the Namibians cannot ask access for their benefit? Mm-hmm. And this is why we will have to have a look at renovating the legal system in Namibia, mm-hmm, to make sure that ownership of our resources is actually restored to the people of Namibia. Mm-hmm. We will have to review exactly what is the deals. And that's why we are proposing a system whereby everyone will know exactly that mine, who belongs, who does it belong to, mm-hmm, who owns the shares, etc. How did they acquire those shares? Mm-hmm. And we need to make sure that we don't go on to punitive measures. Mm-hmm. We need to give people opportunities to redeem themselves and to say, I'm really sorry, this was wrong. Here is the proper, the resources back to the people. Mm-hmm. The newly discovered resources is not going to be beneficial to us in short while, mm-hmm, the oil and gas. Mm-hmm. And I don't want even to talk about green hydrogen. That's a nightmare dream that it's not going to wake up at all. Okay. And I've said that last year, a long time ago, forget, mm-hmm, about this green hydrogen. Mm-hmm. I've got nothing about freedom of association, mm-hmm, where people can invest their own money. It's your own risk. But, mm-hmm, we shall not, as a government under my leadership, mm-hmm, invest taxpayers' money, mm-hmm, in an experiment for which its fruition we don't know. Mm-hmm. Feasibility study has not been completed. Mm-hmm. And I've understood that the German government is now questioning the investment and the amount of money that went into the green hydrogen, mm-hmm, project in Doris. I think it's approximately 50 kilos, mm-hmm, east of Hendricks Bay. Mm-hmm. These people have invested money and nobody knows. There's no accountability. There's, mm-hmm, no legal framework. There's nothing you can do about it. Mm-hmm. The resources of this country has been mismanaged. Mm-hmm. And it has been mismanaged because there's inappropriate laws to control and to be able to regulate its extraction. Mm-hmm. So we have proposed 4 regulatory frameworks that will be implemented on day one within the first 100 days that we have taken office. Mm-hmm. That is the Oil and Gas Management Law, mm-hmm, and also the Oil and Gas Regulatory Authority, mm-hmm, and the Oil and Gas Local Content Act, mm-hmm, and the Oil and Gas Revenue Management Act, mm-hmm, to make sure, especially with the last one, mm-hmm, all Namibians benefit from the resources of our country equitably and equally distributed amongst all our people, mm-hmm, and so that we can actually benefit from that. Mm-hmm. We have got a poverty of human resources, and that is because there's no skilled human people in Namibia to manage some of these industries, especially in the secondary sector. Mm-hmm. We think about oil, but we don't think about oil in terms of what comes from this product, as commodities. Mm-hmm. We think more about in cars, etc. Mm-hmm. But your Vaseline on your lips is petroleum jelly. Detergents that you are actually using, cleaning your floors, etc., is there. Your, mm-hmm, tarmac and everything else, there's a lot that comes from there, mm-hmm, including your antibiotics as well, the petrochemical industry. It's, mm-hmm, a huge industry. Mm-hmm. But I've been speaking to some of the investors that are quite keen to come to Namibia, mm-hmm, and invest in the petrochemical industry. So it's not only seeking the power to govern and to be delegated the authority to govern Namibia, but we are also looking at which people can we get in on day one to create jobs for our people so that we can actually utilize our resources effectively in benefiting our people. So the resources will only become ours when we have got proper control over it and not give it to the foreigners to just ship out. You know, the amount of material being shipped out of this country to go and provide jobs in other countries and value addition in other countries is shocking.
Mm.
And this has been taking place for the past 34 years. You know, Rossing Uranium opened in 1973. And all these years, 52 or so, 51 years, all this has been shipped out. We have not utilized it. And that's why we are talking about developing the secondary sector. This is the manufacturing of commodities that we can sell outside and sell in our shops cheaply, made in Namibia. You know, the two of us are sitting in this studio. Tell me one piece of equipment here or anything made in Namibia. Nothing. It's all imported. So it doesn't mean that we haven't got ability to manufacture these things, to make them, or ability or brains to teach our people to be skilled and to be given manual dexterity to do these things. It's just that we've got bad policies and bad leaders, you know, that hasn't been thinking about the nation at large. So it's critically important that while we are talking about, it's a beautiful song, resources in Namibia, as long as it's in the ground and as long as we cannot actually process it, it doesn't belong to us. And that's why they are shipping it out. We need to get this stopped by properly legislating. It belongs to the people. Those that will give me the mandate to go and make these laws, believe me or not, I'll make those laws and stop the extraction of our natural resources and shipping thereof. If you want our natural resources, put up a factory here and let's process it here and provide jobs for our people and let's benefit from the fruits of their labor too.
To stop giving out raw materials that they can do whatever.
Yeah, because
they want to
let me give you a bunch of grapes from Ausenkamp.
Okay.
Instead of coming in a factory in Namibia and then process to either make grape juice or wine, it is taken out to South Africa. Now, it could have cost $10, just that bunch. When it goes to be translated to South Africa, the transport cost is added. And that is what the value addition means. And then when it's processed there into the bottle of wine, the value of that, and then transported back to Namibia, another value. From $10, you can now, $79 or whatever here. Now, when it comes back for you to buy, it's much more expensive. But had you processed it in here, the cost of transport back and forth is not there. So the bottle of wine, for those who drink, I don't drink alcohol, will be cheaper. But also,
and then the labor involved also.
The labor involved is that, you know, the salaries you are paying people is the value that you add. And you, if you are going to sell it at the end, you have to take that into consideration. Otherwise, you'll be working at a loss. It's basic economics, one, two, three. So that is critical. So we need, the primary sector is where your materials are, in the gardens, in the ground or whatever. You take them out, you bring them in the secondary sector where you process them into commodities. You can then go and refine them again, but you can then put it in ShopRite, and then ShopRite sells it to somebody who may consume it or go and sell it out again. So that's critically important. May I just clarify one thing in respect to election day?
Okay.
It's probably very important for, first of all, for all the listeners to understand that the IPC was the only party that actually had a plan of how to protect our democracy. When we send our observers to South Africa, we have researched all the companies that print ballots in South Africa. So we were aware of the ownership of the company that printed these ballots. We also prepared our tapes, specially designed 3 months in advance, to go and seal the boxes containing the ballot papers. And as the company sealed it in the factory, we also sealed it. And each box is specific for a constituency, and inside it is containing specific bundles of ballot papers specific for a polling station. And there is also a schedule which says what is in each box. So box 201, when you look at the schedule, there's nothing saying it's Tobias Anyeko. In the schedule, it says Tobias Anyeko. And says, okay, which polling stations? And then you open it, it says polling station X, Y, and Z. So that box will alone be opened on the election day in that constituency. So from the factory, IPC, has sealed it and secured it. Two, where it's going to be opened for the people to vote. And consequently, it's up to us to protect it. Now, IPC knows that we've got 4,741 polling stations and 900 mobile ones. We will have a system of ensuring that the mobile ones will not go out of the sight of our equipment to keep an eye on them. We will ensure that we have actually got 10,000 now, 10,000 agents submitted to the ECN of IPC. We are the only party that has managed on time to submit because we are prepared long before this to make sure this, the rigging of the election will not take place. So every polling station has got two people. And those two people will be the eyes of that polling station for the IPC. And we covered the whole country. And we cover the mobile unit as well. The other thing that we've done as well is also create special seals with special systems that the ECN doesn't know anything about it and nobody else knows about it and will be able to change it. So you can manufacture it.
Of course.
So we manufactured it 3 months ago. And it's only unique to IPC. And it's got IPC on it and a serial number. We know exactly where the serial numbers are going. So people who are fearful that the Omahoro Tavakwa will be stolen and things like that, forget it.
Fear not.
We will. We are serious about this. There are people who go toy toy. We want to participate in elections. But they did nothing to control and protect the vote of the people once the people vote for them. And this is why I'm saying that. You know, clearly, if I was a voter, I will go to the party that has put a lot of energy in protecting my vote. Why should I vote for somebody who didn't even bother putting an agent there to protect my vote? So put your vote where it's protected. That way you know that your vote will count. And if your vote is not protected, why would you vote for somebody who did not even spend energy and labor in thinking and planning this whole thing in order for us to really change? So if Namibians want change, you need to go and vote for a political party that has put effort in to make sure it protects your vote. And then on the other hand, again, there is a lot of people saying that what happens if I'm blind? Who's going to take me to vote? The law says that no one is allowed to go into the polling booth twice. You can only go in once. It consequently means that you can take one of your relatives if you are an elderly person and you go and ask, they will assist you to vote. But that person cannot assist another person. You can get a, an agent, whether the ECN or political party agent of your choice. Anyone of your choice. It's your vote. You can say, I want this person who belongs to this party that I want to go and vote. But if you say, I want a member of IPC, obviously we know already you're going to vote IPC. So it's no longer a secret. We've got a tricky situation that we didn't cater for our visually impaired people. So that is the only time. The elderly people, if you make a mistake in the crossing there, you can always call it a spoiled ballot, get another ballot, and then you make a correct one. So take your time to do that. There's also talks about the number of queues that there will be there, and the queues has been long, and the young people have become disillusioned and turned back and never voted.
Yes,
try to persuade the ECN to say that a vote is a constitutional right and it should not be impeded by lack of administrative efficiency in the ECN in providing opportunities for people to walk in. We were insisting that there should be two queues depending on the volume of the people voting. But it's democracy. You've got queues and queues all over the world of people voting. It's your determination to stay in that queue. Even come back, come in early. So that when it opens, you are there, you vote. I want all the young people in Namibia to vote for IPC before 1 o'clock on voting day and stay there to keep an eye and protect their vote and be there when they are counting it and until the results comes out. Sacrifice, just like those who died for this country, sacrifice one day in your life. You'll be the happiest person. I want you to celebrate with IPC on the 28th of November to say, hooray, Nakatope, we've done it. Washa. And there you are, you know, wazala, you know, and we get it right. So, but you don't want to go and betray the future and the current by voting any other party. If you really want to get rid of SWAPO, if you really want to get rid of corruption and want to get rid of the current situation and get a new leader and a new political party full of young people that has got the same aspirations as you, then you have to vote for the IPC. It's no point voting for a party that is unlikely to actually get sufficient votes in order to get sufficient seats in parliament to govern. We need 49 seats, although we've got 450,000 members. And if all of them vote, we already have got 40 seats in parliament, in the next parliament. And if sympathizers and supporters also vote, we are bound to get 62 seats in that parliament. I know that there's going to be a shock coming. And I really, anybody who will say that I'm voting this party that has been in existence and governing this country. One, you are voting for unemployment because that's what we've got now. You are voting for the status quo. You are voting for poverty. You are voting for hunger. You are voting for lack of housing, lack of water, lack of medicine in hospitals, and lack of proper infrastructure of education. Those things, seven, bread and butter issues. That's what you are voting for when you are voting for the SWAPO party. They can't tell us anything else what they are going to do. We are telling the Namibian people, we are going to reduce the tax regime to ensure that companies create more jobs, to ensure more people are actually employed. We are going to give Namibian young people, entrepreneurs, a financial support by renovating and reforming the Development Bank of Namibia. And we also are going to make sure that those coming out of school should actually go and get jobs as well. And I think I want to clarify something that, you know, the SWAPO party is so frustrated with, I was in South Africa today, and yesterday I was on the interview with SABC, where I indicated that the people who sponsored this party is Namibian members of IPC. And we as a party has got a responsibility to ensure that that trust that has been placed upon IPC shall be a trust that will execute. And if there's any irregularities, we've got an obligation to our members who are our sponsors. That is the people that support us, the people that has given us the money, Namibians. And instead of them understanding that basic thing, they are now on social media, I understand, yeah, we told you this job has got sponsors somewhere. We've got Namifisa in this country. You know, they are getting T-shirts from China and Shitenges from Tanzania being sponsored by all sorts of people, state capture, basically. Why would, there's no free lunch in this country, you know, in the world. So they got containers of millions of T-shirts, blue, red, and whatever, and they've given them. Who's the sponsors? Has it been in the public domain? You know, they are selling our country out. You know, these the containers came from China. Did they clear them with NAMRA? So we, our sponsors, we IPC sponsors, is Namibians, members of IPC. And that's exactly what it is. And if they want to interpret it differently, deliberately to confuse people and to make people believe otherwise, my advice to Namibians, when somebody start lying, like SWAPO members and SWAPO leaders, all they know is lies. Whatever they say, we shouldn't believe them because they haven't delivered what they promised in the past 34 years. So I just wanted to clarify that with IPC, the members are our sponsors and we've got a duty to our sponsors, the members of the party, when things are done irregularly in the ECN, to challenge those. But it's the voice of the people. And that's why we've put in 10,000 people, which we are going to look after as well thereafter to make sure that what we have been entrusted with the ability to win the elections, we will win it. And we haven't got any doubt about that. And SWAPO knows that IPC will win the elections. And that's why they are panicking. Never in the history of Namibia have you seen SWAPO having full-fledged rallies and rallies and rallies for 2 years in a row, to the extent that they've actually finished much of their money. Not my concern, but that is what it is. Let's be cautious and vigilant about the propaganda. It's that propaganda that is misleading. So young people, go out and vote. You've got a responsibility.
All right, Tate Itula, before we wrap up, you know, because time flies when you're having fun.
Incredible, isn't
right?
it?
Yes. Yes. So before we wrap up, part of your manifesto is obviously talking about unemployment and the youth here in this country. So I wanted to know your take on, do you believe that maybe, just maybe, because of the unemployment rate and because of the fact that the education is not really respected in terms of respected enough for us to get jobs. We go to school, you are an engineer, but you're sitting at home, or you are selling tomatoes. You understand? Could that be a contributing factor to our rapid crime increase and our addiction problem that we are having in this country? Because in every single corner that you see, there is alcohol dependency, there is narcotics dependency, there is all kinds of addictions that are popping up amongst the young people, and nobody seems to be talking about it. But I would like to say that maybe around the theory of unemployment and poverty in the country, that maybe you had something to say about it.
It's extremely sad to see young lives being destroyed by all these social evils, drugs and alcohol, etc. And these people are victims of society. They are victims of a maladministration of the affairs of our nation. And that is exactly what we need to think hard about as to how to remedy it. We need to go into the root cause of this. There is also suicide rates that are going up as well. There is also mental health problems going up as well, because it's sheer stress. Now, we all don't understand how the brain works. We all cope differently in different situations, but some people cope, some people cannot cope, and they don't cope. In 2018, there were 725,742 people employed in Namibia. The unemployment rate was 33.4%. There is now suggestions that the unemployment rate in this country is 45%. That suggests roughly in every sort of 10 people, 4 people are unemployed. That's root, raw statistics. Nobody knows. The Namibia Statistics Agency didn't release any of those things. So we don't actually know who is unemployed or not. And until such time that we know who's unemployed, we'll not be able to plan. There is also no statistical evidence to suggest how many people are now afflicted with addiction of drugs, afflicted with addiction of alcohol. You find, I've traveled villages, you find a lot of young people at kuka shops just ringing tombo, and that's their daily bread, as it were. Sad, really. And one of them was there saying that, I've got all my qualifications, I'm a teacher, but there's nothing I can do. What is it that we can do? And this is why, unless we can solve the problem of unemployment in this country by drastically taking measures to bring about investment in this country, something that I've already started doing to make sure that within the first 100 days, at least we get something like 30,000 people employed. I don't want to go to the unrealistic proposals of 500,000 people employed. I've just indicated how many people were employed in 2018, 725,000. And someone is talking about employing well over half of that within a period of, you know, 5 years. I mean, you really just need to know that that's going to be 100,000 people every year, and divide that with 10 or 12 months, you're talking about 9,000 people every month being employed. Now, where is the industries? Where is the businesses that will employ these people? It's no good putting a little bit of jelly around the lips of people and thinking that it will suddenly come up with a digestible sort of meal. No. We need to be honest with our people. We need to be realistic and objective and factual in what we are saying. That's why I keep on repeating figures, so that people can understand what it is. The number of companies that I've now spoken to, a number of people outside this country that I have now engaged with, that are ready to come in and invest in Namibia, have now gone to 10. And there are people who want to invest in the oil industry, in the railway, in the infrastructure development, in the port, and also in our hospitals and housing as well, that wants to this country. If they come into this country and you create a very good environment of investment where they are making more profit, and provide them with incentives of land and also tax reliefs, etc., they will be able to provide jobs in this country. We will be able to get the personal taxes paid into our revenue coffers as well. We need to think logical economical and political, and also understand the social impact of lack of employment in this country. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's a terrible mismatch between the skills that has been given in our educational institutions mm-hmm. and the skills required by the yes. businesses. Mm-hmm. We need to create a situation whereby these businesses and the people providing the education are actually matched. At the same time, you've got private institutions providing education. We need to give an incentive to these people to be able to be sponsoring students in their institutions and provide real quality skills coming out there and reskilling some of our people as well. But this mismatch has resulted in so many people educated with no job. Mm-hmm. You will not be surprised if you find a lawyer mm-hmm. driving a taxi in Namibia, because there is no jobs in this country. Mm-hmm. There is over 20,000 or 15,000 when I was counting last time from an organization, unemployed teachers in this country. Mm-hmm. And that's why I want to put emphasis on the teachers and say, teachers, Dr. Itula is there for you. IPC is there for you. Go and vote for IPC. Your situation will change. Mm-hmm. And give us that 5 years to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. We seriously have to attend to the unemployment. Mm-hmm. We seriously have to attend to addiction. Mm-hmm. We seriously have to, because it destroys life and destroys mm-hmm. families as well. You know, people completely get alienated from their families. And you know, I had a neighbor who died and his life was basically, we've grown up together. Mm-hmm. And his life was basically just alcohol and cigarettes and drugs, etc. Mm-hmm. And he died a horrible death because for months and months, he could no longer move. And he was being relieved, a help by the family in bed. He couldn't move. It's a horrible, indignified way to die. Mm-hmm. And it's a horrible, indignified life to have endured as a person, mm-hmm. you know, human life. So we need to seriously look at these issues and tell people that we cannot make promises to play around with people's lives by promising what is not deliverable. Mm-hmm. So we need to be realistic, objective, and to say that if you provide me with that promise, why didn't you deliver it a long time ago? So young people, go out and vote and also provide solutions and make sure that we get an enough mandate to be able to bring about change for your benefits.
All right. This was quite an eventful 1 hour.
Indeed.
Yo. Thank you so much. And wow, it was a pleasure leading.
And I didn't have any notes.
I'm telling you, straight off the bat, it was
straight from my heart.
You know, straight.
I really love this country and I love my people.
It is It's nice to see. And it's nice to also be in your presence and to understand exactly where you are coming from as a human being and as a Namibian citizen. You understand? Because before everything else, you are a Namibian citizen.
Yes.
And I like the fact that you put that above everything else.
Yeah, and this is what we mm-hmm. need to say, that if you belong to different political parties, mm-hmm. be Namibians first and respect each other and mm-hmm. respect each other the way that you are actually telling mm-hmm. each other the truth as well. And mm-hmm. let all the other political parties participate in political activities mm-hmm. without unnecessary lying and telling, ridiculing people. Mm-hmm. Tell the people what you are going to do rather than hammering on Dr. Itula is British, what, and all these lies. Wonderful. Good night,
all right.
Members
Thank you so
of the
much.
Public. Thank
Good
you very
night,
much.
Good night, members of the public. That was Dr. Itula of IPC.
This program was sponsored by the Independent Patriots for Change Party.